Welcome to iHeart Geek.
And welcome to another episode of iHeart Geek. We are doing the Coronado trilogy, or as Christina likes to say, what is it?
It's the Blood and Ice Cream trilogy.
Okay.
Ice cream.
This we are going to be talking about three movies that on the surface are not a trilogy, but when you dig it a little deeper, it is definitely one of the greatest trilogies ever made. And these three movies in the trilogy are Shaun of the Dead, At World's End, and Hot Fuzz. These are all directed by Edgar Wright, starring, among other people, but the main two are Simon Pegg and Nick Frost.
Yes.
Huh. Okay, before I do my introduction, I even did a commercial for this, and this is important. Today's episode is brought to you by the brilliant sitcom Spaced. Please do yourself a favor. It's on Amazon Prime. Watch it. It is brilliant. And if it wasn't, and Edgar Wright directed those, and Simon Pegg and Nick Frost and everybody that you've seen in these movies are in that sitcom as well. And it is beyond brilliant. And it is like the most 90s thing to ever 90s. Okay. Does that make sense? Okay. Wow. I've ever talked without you guys like interrupting. This is awesome. Okay. Let me introduce the panelists, and this will be the last time that I get to talk without being interrupted, which is awesome. Let's start out with Mr. Chris Giorgetti. How are you doing, bud?
Yarp.
Outstanding. We have Mr. Tyler Romine. How you doing, bud?
Doing good. I don't have red on me.
We have Miss Christina. How you doing?
I'm ready to let's boo-boo.
You want a boo-boo? Yeah, well, that means you're going to leave.
No, it means I'm going to drink.
You missed that episode. And then finally, we have Miss Michelle. How are you doing today?
Excellent. I got my cranberry juice, so I'm ready. Yeah.
You want? I'll have a cranberry and nothing else. Or a water. You're going to have to be the one guy with the water and the beer. So these are all inside jokes. You guys should watch these movies before you watch this episode, because you're not going to get...
Yes.
Highly recommended.
At the minimum, watch Hot Fuzz and Shaun of the Dead, I think. I'm thinking. Okay, so what was your guys' first introduction to the trilogy? I don't think anybody started out on the same one, because none of them you really need to watch first.
I think I watched Shaun of the Dead first, years ago, and I got hooked.
Outstanding.
Yeah, that was my first one.
Christina? Yeah.
My Sean actually found it, and he made me watch it. I had no idea what it was about, but the name is spelled like his. We have to watch this just because they spelled the name right. And I laughed and I laughed, and I watched it like four or five times with my friends. Oh, you got to see this. You got to see this. And then it just was, snowballed from there.
Outstanding. Tyler?
Yo, I'm the zombie guy. You know who?
Well, yeah, we know what you watch first.
It is Shaun of the Dead. For sure.
Chris?
I first saw Shaun of the Dead in 2004 when it came out, which by my calculations, I was still a wee lad in high school. So,
wee lad.
Yeah, there's to this day, there's only one scene in Shaun of the Dead that still freaks me out, but that's...
We'll get to that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So to answer your question, 2004.
Outstanding. Yeah. Okay, so let's kind of jump into it. These movies have this amazing chemistry between Simon Pegg, Nick Frost, and the brilliant direction of Edgar Wright, who later went on to do one of my favorite movies, Scott Pilgrim versus the World. If you've listened to this show for any amount of time, you know that is my favorite movie. Quick cuts and just he directs like it's a comic book. And I really wish I would have seen what he would have done with Ant-Man instead, even though Ant-Man was good, but I wanted to see what he would have done with it anyway. So let's talk about kind of some of the brilliance of their chemistry. I think that Simon Pegg is just a natural born leader on screen. There's something about him that no matter what part he's playing, he is the leader of the group.
Yeah, I would say so.
I'm gonna and I think I'm gonna disagree though, because
okay,
we'll probably get into it a little bit more, but I think less so on World's End.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking the same.
I wasn't too keen on his role in World's End.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but you talk about Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz. Yeah, that's where him and Nick Frost work so well together.
Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz are Nick Frost's and Simon Pegg's movies. Like, yeah, they are the stars, hands down. Whereas At World's End is more of an ensemble piece, and he's kind of in the background, and it's more Patty Considine and Martin Freeman.
I felt like At World's End, it was almost a role reversal between...
Very much.
Him and Nick Frost. And I don't think that, to me, that just made me uncomfortable to
work. Well, they all did such a fantastic job of every movie. They are not playing the same character. In fact, they're very, very different every single movie. Yeah.
No, that's true. I think it's just that dynamic. It just, I don't know, with those two, it just works. It works better, in my opinion, when, you know, Nick Frost is kind of the... I don't know.
Well, I think the thing that makes you uncomfortable too is that Simon Pegg and Nick Frost, especially in Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz, they are the ultimate bromance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then they come in with The World's End, and it's this angsty, troubled friendship versus being that ultimate bromance. Because even in Hot Fuzz, where they just met each other, it's like this.
And because it was like they were on a date, you know, when they were. Yeah. They went out drinking and, you know, go to his house for a movie. It was like, aw.
I think being friends in real life, like they are, really comes through on camera.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They pick up on each other's cues and stuff real nicely.
Yeah. No, I feel like these guys have and deserve every bit of credit that Jay and Silent Bob have. That even like classical, like Abbott and Costello and Laurel and Hardy, I think they have that kind of chemistry. And it doesn't come across very often.
I kept thinking David Spade and Chris Farley.
Yeah, you can see a little bit of that.
I was going to say, like, Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hara. Like, you know, it's that. Yeah, it's that kind of, like, relationship
connection. They're married. They are married. No, I mean, not in real life, but they are.
I mean, they might as well be, because they work so well together.
And I'm not talking about Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hara. I'm talking, though, those two, their careers are always going to be married, because they are both fantastic on their own. We've all seen them and stuff on their own. They are so much better together.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that the Edgar Wright thing, I think he understands that better than anybody. And because he is the third stooge in it, honestly. They know how to work together on that. I'm getting a lot of classic comedy references here.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is the part that I think I was looking forward to in the conversation the most. I feel like the Cornetto Trilogy is the ultimate, absolute ultimate representation of the British side of Generation X. Do you guys have any thoughts on this?
I do.
Fire away, Chris.
So
that's my favorite.
There it is.
Yeah, I love it.
So, being the baby of the group, because, you know, I'm not a Gen X person, I'm going to yield my portion of the time to you all and just listen to this lovely discussion.
Now, take it away. You went through all that. You went through all that to say, and I don't want to talk about it.
Well, I have no idea what it's like to be a Gen Xer, because, you know, I grew up in the 90s. Under helicopter parents, but that's a story for my therapist. But this isn't therapy. This is a podcast.
You have your own show for that. George Eddy on Ice.
Yes. Yes. On the next episode, Helicopter Parents.
Yes.
Also, yeah, I mean, Gen Xers, we're kind of what, like the forgotten generation?
Completely.
We're latchkey kids left on our own, to we our own devices. Yeah, we raised ourselves pretty much.
Which explains when you
started working at 14.
Like, yeah, and a lot of us had the younger siblings we were taking care of, and so throughout these movies, you see all these traits, all these characters, like stereotypes almost, that you know, how it was growing up to be a Gen Xer with the video games and just, you know, lazing around. But then, as true to form, You know, we're called lazy, but we're also called hardworking. It's like this interesting
dichotomy. Yeah.
Yeah. Like when you know what goes down, like we're ready to,
yeah,
to stand up and fix it and do all things. So like that just, that comes out in all three of these movies. Obviously World's End is like the quintessential, Gen X midlife crisis. Yeah. And you know, it was funny because when, you know, I rewatched Shaun of the Dead, and it just reminded me so much of things that people were saying, like when COVID hit and Gen Xers were supposedly going to be like, you know, the only generation left, because we're like, yeah, we'll sit inside, we'll do what we got to do, we don't care, you know, and everyone else is like, ah.
That's so, because we played Oregon Trail. We know how this ends.
Oh yeah, we're not
dysentery.
We're all gonna die. We're staying home.
Well, I think there's one scene that in Shaun of the Dead that it is like the most Generation X thing. We're gonna go fight the zombies. So what do we have? Records. We love Gen X has the weirdest obsession with music. I'm one of them, and they're going through their records, deciding, you know, this might save my life, but let's not throw the prints. We can throw away this and this and this, but there's certain things we're not going to throw away. It doesn't matter. It's a first pressing. And that is kind of the Generation X stereotype.
A bit of optimism in a dire situation.
Always.
They're going to be around. We need these records.
We're cockroaches. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, we had a whole conversation about what albums would we throw away from that scene, because we have a pretty substantial collection. And I was like, well, I'm not getting rid of this. I'm not getting rid of this. This one's never been opened. So
you want to know another Generation X trait, and I'm getting on my soapbox here. But the fact that Gen Xers always want to work with their friends. If you look at all three of these movies, everybody is their friends. That's why they're in all three of them. The extras, I don't know if you noticed, but the extras in all the movies are pretty much the exact same people.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, the opening scene in At World's End, when, you know, it comes out and he's sharing with a group. You look to his left, you look to his right. Those are the two zombies that were in his backyard that they were throwing the records at.
Yes.
Yes.
You know, they have they keep their cast all in the family. I was listening to some of the commentary on all three films. But also, you have to notice that Great Britain only has like 20 actors to begin with. So it's of course, you're going to get the same five people in all British things. That was my bad joke of the night. So there you go, America.
That was such a millennial thing to say.
Oh, it's so millennial.
I'm going to jump in here, and I'm going to take credit for it now, okay? Wow. Okay. No more picking on Chris. He doesn't deserve it. It's not his fault. He was born.
Sometimes
was
I
born.
Do. Oh, yeah. Sometimes I deserve it. But
nothing,
you know, I
like
appreciate
alienating
it.
Half your audience.
We do it with love.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's another Gen X trait.
No, right? Honestly, the sarcasm. you have to kind of understand Gen X to understand the sarcasm that's in those movies.
Yeah.
It's never mean spirited. They say rotten things to each other, but it's never mean spirited. It's like if you didn't love somebody, you're not going to insult them.
Yeah, you know where it comes from, and if it doesn't come from that, you also really know.
Yeah. No
confusion. What I loved is, you know, the especially in World's End, where, you know, it's this whole idea, and in fact he even says it in like the bathroom scene about how, you know, we're the coolest generation and we were cooler, you know. He's talking to the younger kid, well, kid,
and angry about it. Yeah,
yeah, like we were the cool guys, you don't even know how cool we are, like oh my god, I've said that to my little sister. She's a millennial. She loves it.
Like, you just don't even understand.
I know.
And the way
we made it cool for you.
And the way they stereotypically label the millennials too. That every millennial in all of these movies wears the track jumpsuit with the hoodie going up, and it's like, yeah, that's kind of a stereotype. I gotcha. And that was honestly when I went in the Navy and I started seeing people that were younger than me that were, they're not one of us anymore. And that's what they were wearing. And I'm like, Okay. And I so related to that in the weirdest way when watching these movies. I'm like, yeah, I hate them too. You know, I don't hate millennials. But that was, but that was.
We don't hate.
Careful there, make Dub.
You, no, they make you think about, they make you think that they take the worst and best of, you know, a group of people without being rotten about it. It's like, yeah, yeah, he's wearing a jumpsuit. That's douchey. We're done. Yeah. You know?
And then another,
go ahead.
No, I was just, my mind went off, but you know, another part of these movies is all of them kind of envelop all these things that Gen Xers grew up with, as far as like the music, the movies, the technology, everything that we kind of watched, you know, go forward, is all of that's present in these movies as well. Just kind of what makes
the generation
how they are. But these guys portray it like absolutely perfectly. It comes across.
I kind of want to talk about music, but I don't know if we should wait for the breakdown of the individual movies, because it does have very much a overreaching arc through the music in all of them. That it just, the catchiest, poppiest, low tech music in the world, and I don't know, you fall in love with it. It's so simple.
Fall in love with it.
As I say, it's grunge without the distortion.
The scene in Shaun of the Dead where they're beating up the zombies around the pool table listening to Queen is what got me into Queen.
As, really?
Nice. Yeah, I love that.
That's awesome.
But to be, yeah, Wayne's World did that for me.
Because, like, let's see, 2004, I was like, I don't know, 16.
Eight. Yeah.
Yeah, eight. Basically. So yeah, that's when I was starting to like get into like good rock music, like The Who, The Beatles, Queen, Bruce.
Don't.
I knew that was coming.
Don't make me do it. I'm going to hurt you. Don't make me do it. I'm going to make you cry again, Chris.
It's okay. I can take
it. Is that what sound like in the Drunk Tank too? I'm sorry. Oh, yeah. He's got a DUI.
Don't make me pull out Satomi.
It's okay. We'll both do it. It's all good.
Pulling out the big guns now.
This conversation just went in a really weird way really fast.
We somehow weaponized a cast member.
I mean, I was just...
Don't make me pull in Satomi.
I was just sharing my love of Queen and how this movie introduced me to Queen, and then I was telling you my musical interests, and then, you know, Dub had to be Dub. And
not... You know, you said it not only once. When I didn't take the bait, because I was like, I'm not going to take the bait, and then you did it again.
No. I mean,
I know. Did it again. I'm like,
You kind of did keep casting that line.
Yeah.
Just a little.
I know.
Because back to Queen.
Anyway.
Back to good music with people that music can sing. Not no talent hacks. I got you. Go ahead. Oh, no. Wow, I'm being rotten today.
Wow.
This is on you, Chris. This is on you. This is your fault.
I know.
I expect an apology on George 80 on Ice about it too.
Yes, I am writing it down now for my script. Apologize to Dub on air.
I love it. Okay, so Queen. No, this is it was just such a. I've actually went back and discovered a lot of cool music from listening to these soundtracks. I've got every one of these soundtracks on Spotify because they are just. It's a lot of music I hadn't heard before, but it is just really cool. And they kept the spirit of Gen X without throwing in Nirvana or, you know, the Seattle scene or Ween or.
Yeah, they didn't even have to pull any of that.
Yeah, they put in new stuff, but it's so fit. And that's its own art form, I think.
Yeah, new classics.
Okay, so now I want to do a quick discussion, and we're going to kind of go through all the movies individually. And let's, as we go through, I want to kind of talk about how they intertwine with the other movies. So I wanted to start, and I'm doing this. Okay, and by the way, I have to say this: John from California did suggest this topic, and. He wasn't able to be on, so I'm making him mad right now because he wanted me to do these chronologically, but there's a reason I'm not. We're doing Shaun of the Dead, At World's End, and then Hot Fuzz, and I did that because I put the stronger of the two movies on the ends, and we can argue about that in a minute. Wow.
Yeah, we're going to argue.
Really? Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's on.
Okay, that's nothing wrong with that. But so let's start with my personal, one of my two favorites is Shaun of the Dead. The way that this movie came in as just a, I want to say, it's almost like a coming of age movie at the beginning. It's like, okay, lovable loser. He lost his girlfriend. Okay. And if you want to keep writing this movie, he's going to eventually win the girl back and he's going to grow up and they'll all be better people. And then they twist, just like all these movies, they drop you on your ear and say, okay, no, it's going to be zombies. I thought that was a neat way that they did that. It wasn't what you expect if you don't know what you're walking into, if that makes sense.
Well, like, how do you take a movie that makes you laugh until you almost pee?
Almost.
fill it with gruesome horror and then break your heart in moments. Like, that is such a unique power to have. And I'll be straight honest. Every time it's the mom scene, Simon Pegg breaks my heart.
I know. Like, he is just broken down.
So much power in that. But then he turns around and then you have these moments where you're just laughing so hard you can't breathe. Like, it's genius.
They did such a great job of not making the moments that make you sad go on long enough that you can't enjoy the rest. Because I hate being mopey through a movie because I'm like, yeah, I'm an ugly crier. I don't want that. I want to laugh.
Yeah, they pull it back really, really well and quick too. So, but you get that. The emotion comes through so big on that scene. It kills me. But I mean, I think the whole movie, it's start to finish, it's the writing's brilliant, the acting's brilliant, the jokes are brilliant. They're just like, they're on. Some stuff too, which I think in all of these movies, if you don't pay attention
to
what they're saying, you're gonna miss like some brilliant stuff.
And it's but British, so use your subtitles.
Yeah. I just like the fact that, you know, these guys are just these slacker, you know, dudes who kind of just sit and play video games, and you know, you wouldn't think they'd be the heroes. Mm-hmm. And like in Gen X fashion, they rise up and they're the heroes.
I do love that their answer was get to the Winchester. I've always said if there's a zombie attack, I'm going to go to Costco because it's got everything I need, and you need a membership to get in, so I should be safe from zombies.
Because like it's all on lockdown. You put the metal things down, and you're done. You're good.
Now, Tyler, as our resident zombie expert, what's your take on the zombie side of this?
Oh, it's done well. It's done great. It was a bit of a, I believe John had referenced in a previous episode, a love letter to the past zombie movies.
Mm-hmm.
You see the influences from stuff like Day of the Dead and just a lot of Romero style. I loved it as far as keeping it slow zombies, so the zombies didn't become too much, too distracting.
Yes,
and they didn't turn like that.
Right. It took a minute.
Build up.
I probably wouldn't have gone to a bar, but if that's the only gun in town, you know, okay.
Well, they are in England, so yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I love that whole aspect as far as paying homage to movies of the past.
So, go ahead.
It's very, the pacing of the movie is excellent. Because, like, you get right away that it's a comedy.
Yeah.
And then they like slowly give you these little breadcrumbs of, oh, this is a serious horror movie.
And they ease you into it.
Yeah, except for this one scene where the one guy who gets like his insides. The one scene that still makes me queasy to this day.
And be honest, you were kind of happy when it happened to him.
He deserved it.
Oh, he definitely deserved it. He totally deserved it.
But it's like, still, it's cringy.
Yeah.
That part's hard to watch.
If anything, this movie, in addition to, you know, expanding my musical, you know, taste, it helped me get into like horror movies a little bit because it had the jokes, you know?
Yeah.
To kind of like, it's like training wheels to watch other gruesome horror movies.
Yeah. You know, that actually, that training wheels is a great analogy, because, and I want to throw this in. In the first scene that you really see the zombies, when they're in the backyard and they push the girl and then she falls down and the table goes through her. And that's kind of gruesome and kind of scary, but it was Training Wheels. It was, but they also made it kind of funny at the same time.
Because she gets up and there's the hole.
And you can see them through it. Like,
but it was Training Wheels. Like, okay, well, it's going to start getting a little scarier now. And it does. It starts getting a little bit worse. And I, you know, as a non-horror guy, I actually kind of appreciated that. It was like, you know, dipping your toe in before you jump all the way in the water.
You get that, and then you get the total ridiculousness where they're just throwing random household goods at these guys, like cans and pillows.
It was their training session.
Which is definitely a theme later, too.
Yeah, and just the fact, and the... Yeah. And so, and it was all to the music, and it was just all very like synced, you know, it was awesome. But yeah.
I also loved in Shaun of the Dead when Bill Nighy dies and becomes a zombie, and, you know, they're blasting rock music in his Jag. Like, he reaches over to turn it off. And it's just like, you have those like heartbreaking moments where he has like that, you know, I could have been a better.
Yeah.
It's, there's a perfect balance between, you know, gruesome horror and comedy.
Well, and the joke went along perfectly with it when he's like, there's nothing left of your husband in there. And it was so passionate and dramatic. And you see him just kind of reach over it. And they're like, well, okay, maybe there's a little bit.
always funny. A little tinge of somebody left behind.
Now,
yeah.
Now, something I want to talk about. If you watch Space, you will get the brilliance of this. But the other group that they meet up with in the beginning and the end, with the girl. Now, if you watch Space, that was his roommate in the show Spaced. And the whole show is about him and her. And to see them back big screen together, it was absolutely brilliant. And it's an Easter egg. You guys don't need to know it, but you have a lot more appreciation afterwards. But I want to watch Shaun of the Dead Point 2, where they actually follow those guys around for the day.
I don't
see Martin Freeman doing his thing with the zombies.
Get the behind the scenes flip side of what was going on when Sean was busy.
Well, Sean was cowering. Let's be honest. This group was going out and kicking butt. You know, they got a freaking
redeems
tank.
Himself. He does. Sean redeems himself
at times.
But
more of Sean's team survived.
Right.
You exactly. Wait till the end. Yeah. She was the only one left standing.
Her team was identical to his. So
yeah. And Sean came back with 2.5 people.
There you go.
player two has entered the game.
What's great about that is you don't even have to know the Easter egg to find it entertaining, because like you said, I think Tyler, is that they were the exact same people walking by, essentially, even the girl with the hat. And so even just in itself, it was funny.
But. It was hilarious.
Oh, and then, I hated that. I hate the David character so much. And they did such a great job of making him just this horrendous douche. I mean,
the thing that's funny.
He's in love with Liz.
He's actually a hilarious comedian.
He is. A Black Books. You should check it out.
Yeah. So to see him in that character when I normally really liked him, I'm like, ew. You're just cringy.
But I say they have a lot of people in these that are you've seen before. Yeah. Okay, so let's move on to before I do that. Okay, a similar theme that we see through these movies. It's not always exactly a happy ending. It's a happy-ish ending.
Yeah.
And all these movies are kind of similar in that manner, some more than others. But I think this one, I would say this one's probably the saddest. Oh, but at the same time, they made it so it wasn't like, oh. He still has this.
But it was, it's sad, but it's like kind of sweet.
Too. It wasn't the saddest for me. Definitely not. I think I disagree. So.
Well, we'll get on to that one.
There it is.
Nice. And I think the other underlying theme that connects all three movies is the theme of having to grow up.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, obviously he was experiencing the dangers of complacency.
You know,
he's stuck. He's a bump on a couch. Lost his girlfriend. You know, you see similar similar events in Hot Fuzz. Obviously, he didn't have much of a life in World's End, but you know, all three movies, he's forced to grow up, you know, throughout the movie. And
well, I think that's true.
For me, that's what makes it a trilogy.
Well, I think. Go.
In Hot Fuzz, Simon Pegg's character, Nicholas Angel, he already has everything. So, like, for him, it's being, you know, him being sent away and learning how to just, like, be a normal person.
And being a mentor.
Yeah.
Yes. And so for
him. We'll get there soon, yeah. I promise.
Oh, yeah.
So
he's got to learn to switch it off. He can't switch it off. You know, since that, what, age five, he says he wanted to be a police officer. He was obsessed with it. And it was time to grow up and realize you can let loose a little.
Okay. Let's jump on to At World's End. Sorry, I'm trying to keep these.
The World's End.
The World's End.
Sorry, we were trying to actually go in order, but
yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Pick it up for John.
This is a personal thing for me. And especially before this weekend, this was definitely my choice of, this is the bottom of the barrel. It's funny, but it's okay. It's kind of forgettable. That was my impression before this weekend. On the rewatch, I actually have to bite my tongue. It's still the weakest of the three, but it's not at all a negative thing because these three movies are so brilliant. I think this movie was a lot better than it was given credit for. I think that, you know, the first movie was horror. This one, I'd probably call sci-fi.
Yeah, definitely.
And again, it starts out very mundane and very just, it's going to be a road comedy. It's going to be buddies going out National Lampoon. They're going to get drunk and hijinks. Yay. And then it flips out real quick.
There are so many genius moments. Gosh, I thought this one was hilarious. I saw a lot of "he doesn't watch, so it's okay" my brother in this. It took him a while to grow up. But, you know, like, especially the part where he's like, "well, I think he's changing because he paid me back the 600 pound he owed me." And they're all like, "he borrowed 200 from each of them." That I just about died in that moment because that's something he would have done. So
I didn't like it as much. For me, it was just missing like kind of the spark that the other two movies have, and I kind of chalk it up to the role reversal. I just didn't buy into Simon Pegg's character. I mean, I liked it. Because I always get teased that I, you know, I'm stuck in the 90s and I can't let it go. But I mean, he took it to like a whole new level. I mean, so I appreciated that. I appreciated kind of the midlife crisis idea. But I don't know. It was just like, and then, you know, having the robots or whatever they were called, the theme of it almost mirrored Shaun of the Dead, but it just didn't quite work for me as much as the zombies did.
I think by sorry.
No, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I think by the time World's End came out, everyone was kind of like
over it
because in all three movies, they use a lot of the same film techniques and plot points. Like there's that whole bit where they're jumping over the fence and it's like the exact same angle, which is brilliant in all three films. And they also they kind of telegraph what the movie's going to be like in the first like 15, 20 minutes. So I think, you know, the formula got stale. I mean, it's still a better conclusion to a trilogy than The Rise of Skywalker, but, you know, that's another
topic. We're not talking about that. if you want to hear our thoughts on that, get behind the paywall. We are on Patreon. We are doing every single Star Wars movie. You're welcome.
but you know, like Michelle said, it was okay, enjoyable, but it didn't, like, blow my mind.
Go
ahead, Tyler.
I feel like what kind of made it weak was the fact that it was so much so fast compared to the other ones. The other ones took their time. Everything's real subtle. This one, they just kind of threw it
in right your face. Yeah.
And for me, it was the ending. It was that the bromance wasn't there. Like, he was like, I don't know which way he went. He went his own way. And
I think that was a bad choice.
That was a horrible choice because you really didn't see. I mean, he's back with the younger blank versions of himself. He never grew up. Like, there wasn't that arc that we're used to seeing in these great movies, and the fact that he's like, I don't know where he is, and this is how I am now, that killed me a little bit, because, you know, Simon Pegg and Nick Frost are so brilliant, and I was okay with him, Nick Frost, being more the leader if they would have developed that more. Mm-hmm. And I feel like they just left us hanging.
Let me say a thought that I have on that. As far as the ending goes on this is the only movie that it doesn't have the two lead characters basically going off the sunset together. And I think this is Edgar Wright saying, it's over. This is the trilogy. We're done. And I felt like I think that might be why that happened. I don't know for sure, but I feel like that was a definite choice that was made.
It was just a bad one.
I mean, I think he kind of, you know, the Simon Pegg's character, I agree that the ending was just sort of like, what? That's not right. But
and fast.
Yeah. Well, and I think the whole film, the problem that I have too, or let's say additional problem I have with this movie, is that the comedy, everything just sort of feels forced. It's like very fast and very forced. Like, this is funny. This is funny. This is funny. But you're just like, okay. Like, it just felt.
You're always trying to catch up.
Yeah. I'm like, wait, no, like this isn't what I'm used to from these guys. And, I mean, but he did, I guess, get a chance to kind of come into his own where, you know, I think at the beginning he was just this total slacker and everything and kind of a loser, but then it's like at the end, it all comes together and he gets to be, you know, like the guy who goes out and
he got what he wanted.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was 16 forever. Him. Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, it kind of worked out. Living the dream.
Yeah. I don't know.
So I want to throw out the two huge positives I see with this one, actually. This one actually is very, very rewatchable. Now, I know that we've all been crapping on it a little bit, but rewatch the movie and it's better the second time. And I'm on my third viewing of it because, let's say, this one didn't do it for me. But I rewatched it. And now I'm rewatching it. And I'm like, there's a lot of actually brilliance underneath it. The other thing I want to say is a huge bonus is this one has the best cinematography of any of them. And you can definitely see where the whole Scott Pilgrim side of things, just, they always had the quick cuts, but I feel like they perfected it on this one. The way they filmed it, the lighting, the realism, it just looks a lot better than the rest of the other movies.
I think it worked better just because of what this movie is about, the theme of it. I think the way they filmed Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz, just it worked for those movies. I think it was brilliant. I see the difference.
Sorry, go ahead, Chris. I didn't mean to step on your toes. It kind of felt like a discount Marvel movie at some point.
Shots fired.
In a good way. In a good way, because you had like the robot alien things and the sci-fi effects. It felt like a discount Marvel movie, but it was actually funny. But you know
all of these ones, and this is not saying as a negative, so I'll get the hate mail later. These are the movies that Kevin Smith always wants to make, but he's not quite good enough to. I love what Kevin Smith does, but this is what Kevin Smith wants to do that he can't. I mean, you watch Yoga Hosers. This is Yoga Hosers if Kevin Smith could have made it.
Being that Kevin Smith and I are from the great state of New Jersey, I will agree with you on that statement.
And I'm the hugest Kevin Smith fan.
Yeah. I mean, his movies are great, but, you know, I agree with that.
Okay, so let's move on to arguably the greatest, Hot Fuzz. Just go.
It's the greatest movie ever made.
It's amazing.
Wow.
Yeah. It's better than Citizen Kane. It's better than 2001 A Space Odyssey. It's better than Spartacus.
It is so much better than Bruce Springsteen.
You know what?
If Bruce Springsteen was a movie.
You know what?
This would be better than him.
You know what? If Bruce Springsteen was a movie, this would be better than Bruce Springsteen as a movie.
You just made my favorite list ever, just so you know that.
Like, everything about this movie is just perfect. The script, the acting, the comedy. It is never not funny. It's just everything about it is so enjoyable. Like, I could easily watch this movie if I was on a deserted island and that was the only, you know, DVD or Blu-ray I had. Or, you know, I'll go on better VHS if they had, like, a VHS player because, you know, 90s and whatever. but it is truly a movie I will never, ever get sick of.
Yeah.
Totally. I found the action to be the best.
Yeah.
The gunfights and everything were way intense for what it was, you know, for being a buddy cop comedy type of murder mystery.
Intentional one-liners because it was an action movie.
Absolutely. Brilliant. Yeah. And done so subtly, like the Brits can do so well.
Yeah, yes. If you don't pay attention, if you're not constantly paying attention to what they're saying, you're going to miss.
Which hit in our main
event. You're going to miss so many jokes. No, I know. But, oh my gosh. And you know what I really love, too, is this movie has... So in Shaun of the Dead, we've got the love, you know, the love interest, the connection there between him and Liz. But, like, here, the love interest is basically,
the bromance.
No, it's those two. It's their little bromance. Like, you see it when they first, obviously when they first meet, it's not on the best terms, but because he's arresting him for being drunk. But, like, then they go, you know, they go out drinking and then they go back to Danny's place and they're watching movies and it's just this cute, they have like this moment where it's like all the feels start coming on and they're like, oh, we're going to be best friends. Like, you just know it. They're just going to be these best friends. So I love that's the love interest in this movie is those two.
Yeah, especially when they point out how incapable he is of having a relationship when Janine tells him, when you can care about someone more than you care about the job. Fun fact, Kate Blanchett actually played Janine.
Mm-hmm. Didn't know that.
Yep, in that mask.
Awesome. In that mask.
Awesome.
I say this without a hint of irony. That buddy story is the friendship I think that every single person wants to have in their life with one person, you know. It's not romantic, it's just that friendship.
That connection.
Yeah.
And I don't mean this in a bad way, but that's almost like a Gen Xer thing more so than other generations.
So tell us about a millennial. Is that true? I'm sorry.
The baby boomers were used to just not getting attached. We didn't have, we were the generation that, you know, we didn't have cell phones, but then we got them and we appreciated them and we used them. Like, we kind of came through technology from almost the start all the way through. So we understand, like, I have the same best friend I've had since seventh grade, and we had to work at that relationship. It's not like just a quick text. We had to work at that. And so I think that that's a part of what I really see in Hot Fuzz is that, he had to work at opening up who he was and not just be focused on the job and become a different person.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point because we were, you know, we were the generation who sat on the phone for hours and talked and hung out and formed these lifelong connections and strong connections. Like, we're the generation, I mean, I'm pretty sure, I'm just going to say we are because I'm going to take it. But, you know, where we just started, like, hugging everybody. Like, everything became a hug. Like, I remember in high school, all of a sudden, we're hugging each other. And that was just a thing. Like, now,
that led to some cross signals growing up.
Yeah. Hey.
Oh, I just killed the room. That was a joke, guys.
Sorry.
Wow.
No, and it's just, you know, again, yeah, working at it, but watching them go through that. And then, you know, he's sharing his favorite movies, which is, you know, such a great love language anyway.
Yes. Yes.
But,
which one do you want to watch first?
Which one?
That was great.
No, yeah. Which one do you want to watch
first?
That's why that relationship was so important, though. It kind of, he was going downhill. I mean, he was the best cop you'd ever met, but it was ruining everything for him. He was, you know, being sent off. He was showing everybody up. He was actually going downhill because he wasn't exactly doing better in the village either. He couldn't switch it off.
Switch it off.
His buddy there. He taught him how to switch it off. You know, pull that stick out of your butt every once in a while and have some fun.
Yeah, so much so that's what he chose at the end was to stay.
Yeah.
I love that.
He felt like he finally belonged somewhere.
Because you see in the beginning of the movie, Simon Pegg is like arresting people left and right, and he gets all these commendations for his like exemplary service. And then he tries to do what he did in London in this small little village. And then Jim Broadbent's character's like, oh, you sure you want to be doing that? And, you know, you see them eating cake or whatever. So right, it's just
as punishment.
It's funny.
Chunky monkey.
Okay, so we are going to move on to our listener feedback.
And now, let's see what all of our geek rock stars have to say.
Okay, so for today's listener feedback, we did what is your favorite of the Cornetto trilogy and why, and Michelle is going to read them for us today. Thank you for not making me do it.
All right, here we go. We've got Andy Trudell. I hope I pronounced that right. Andy says, Hot Fuzz. I enjoyed the mystery involved in the plot, and I felt that Nick Frost's character was not only funnier, but played a bigger role than the other two films. Yarp.
And then,
next we have Mandy Cassidy. Says, Shaun of the Dead, hands down. Although I enjoyed all three differently, I have to say Shaun of the Dead, the mock-up, the storyline, and the nostalgic old-style Benny Hill and Fawlty Towers comes to mind. Hot Fuzz was more of a continuation in the buddy no-matter-what style comedy, with creepy town and odd stuff always happening. The Third World's End, or The World's End, was a little dull, with some funny spots, but a little rushed a touch. We agree, most of us. It had fantastic comedy. Like all the rest, just was a bit darker and almost a cross of Rocky Horror Picture Show style.
That was an interesting take.
Yeah. Daniel Houston, why would you do this to me? less sigh. All out of love, Daniel. I love all three, but most favorite is Shaun of the Dead. They seemingly blended British comedy, suspense, horror, and of course paid homage to the classic Zed Ward movies brilliantly. It never fails to satisfy my occasional need for chaos. And finally, Dino says...
From the Huh podcast, I always have to say it. It's a thing.
Sorry. Did you want to read this one?
No, go ahead. I don't have it.
Dino says... Hot Fuzz. Yes. I thought I was going into a buddy cop satire, but ended up seeing far more folky horror buddy cop comedy. Yes.
Well, thank you, everybody, for your listener feedback. We had a bunch more, but, you know, as always, we cut them down. And if you don't answer why, we're not going to read it on air. Sorry. Wow. That was a moment. Okay, so let's jump
on. Tell me why.
Our main event.
Now it's time for the main event.
So for this version of the main event, we are doing our three favorite quotes or parts of the Cornetto trilogy. We went all over the freaking board. You are welcome. So I'm going to start with number three, and mine is a quote from Hot Fuzz. And it's between Nick Frost and Simon Pegg. He goes, have you ever shot your gun in the air and gone, ah? No, I've never shot my gun in the air and went, ah. And that was the beginning of their relationship. And I loved it so much. Because that's kind of that whole, if you want to be a cop because you watch TV, that's what you think you're going to get. So let's start with you, Mr. George Eddy.
At number three, my number three. First of all, let me just say, it's so hard to pick just three because I love all these movies. But I have to go with whenever they say Krusty Jugglers or the Greater Good in Hot Fuzz, because it's just so ridiculous. And, you know, I've somehow found a way to incorporate saying Krusty Jugglers into my vocabulary. Because it's fun. Because it's fun. So,
what, just at random moments?
Normal conversation.
Yeah, yeah. Because like it's just so joyful to see people's reactions to that. You know?
See, what's nice is you can weed out the ones who actually know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's who you can be friends with.
that's how we find our people.
Fun Tyler? Fact. That's actually one thing that Simon Pegg and Nick Frost bonded over was something like that, an inside joke.
It's funny.
Nice. Tyler?
My number three would be the bathroom fight in World's End. It was just so brutal. They could do so much more since they weren't humans.
Yeah,
it's blue. You know, they could just take it so far.
That would have made the rating harder to get if they would have been in a red. Because it was that.
And the look of confusion on his face the entire time. They spent 15 minutes trying to figure out what was going on. It was great.
You know what? Part of that cracks me up is when the disembodied or disheaded body starts getting up and the head is in between his legs. It's like right up his butt. And I don't know why, but I laugh so hard when I see that scene.
Because we're children.
Yes. Fart jokes. They're always the best. Christina.
Indeed.
I'm sorry.
Hey, fart jokes, Christina.
You didn't pick up on it though. I said, I'm sorry. No, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
Oh God. I was giving it to you. I just had to wait a minute on it.
In Hot Fuzz, when he's very passionately trying to defend his dad, even though he knows he's wrong, and he says, he's not Judge Judy, an executioner. That was such a Gen X moment, but it just kills me every single time.
That was a great scene. Actually, that was on my list too, because that is such a good. It's just it's so pure. You know, it's Michelle.
Shaun of the Dead, which Wendell kind of touched on earlier, was in the garden scene where they've got the records. But like the quote there just kills me when, you know, they're flipping through and he's like, Purple Rain? No. Sign of the Times? Definitely not. Batman soundtrack? Throw it.
Which everybody feels that way.
Yeah, everyone feels that way. Yeah. So that's
favorite. Is it bad I still own that CD?
You would.
Shut up. Okay. My number two, and this is a scene, not a quote, but when the building goes through Timothy Dalton's jaw, it's just so gruesome and so weird and so gross. And it's that moment that you look and you're like, wow, he was James Bond. Now he's a Bond villain. I thought it was a nice little full circle of the career, but that it's horrible. I think that is literally one of the worst things I've ever seen on film.
Well, and the fact that he kept talking,
it hurt.
Ow,
some ice cream.
As the rapper goes flying by at that moment, actually,
yes,
Mr. Giorgetti. Yeah.
My number two moment is from Shaun of the Dead. The whole entire bit, whenever they reference the gun at the Winchester, and they're like, no, it's a fake. And then they pick up the gun when the zombies are trying to get in, and it's a real gun.
After they didn't need it anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which was the best part. And we're all Americans. We're like, yeah, no, I'd know I'd know what that was or not. They're all English. What do you want from them?
I tried.
Tyler?
All right, number two, I had smashing his way through the park in Shaun of the Dead.
So with the cricket bat?
With the cricket bat. Yes. It was his time to finally shine and show that he could lead the way, he could take charge, try to press his ex-girlfriend at the time. And being a zombie fan, smashing zombies always ranks high on my list. So,
in real life, how much fun would that be?
Right?
Just saying.
As long as you don't
terrifying,
know
terrifying, but totally fun.
Yeah, it's sort of like a roller
coaster.
It was
as easy as they made it look.
It's like a tap.
Yeah. Yeah. It'd be like one of those rage rooms you can pay for.
There you go.
What movie did I just watch that in? Anyway, okay, go ahead, Christina.
So mine changed a little bit, and it's Tyler's fault. So when you were talking about the bathroom scene, it's when they come out, and he's like, we got blood on our hands. No, it's ink. We got ink on our hands. That is just hilarious to me, because it's almost like they're making extra sure we know it's not as bad as it could have been.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that just cracks me up. And they go from place to place all covered in ink and they think nobody's going to notice. So that just cracks me up.
And no one does.
I know. It's kind of like, we want to make you just like us.
It's high school. Michelle, go ahead.
Very, very simple one from Hot Fuzz. By the power of Grayskull.
Oh, such a great line.
Every single time I lose
every
it.
Every single time.
By the power of
Grayskull. Such a good line. I don't even know what to say. That's a great line. Okay, so my number one, this is another Hot Fuzz one, and this is, again, Simon Pegg and Nick Frost. Being stabbed was the single most painful experience of my life. And Nick Frost says, so what was the second most painful? That was me. That is me right there. Because I would say that, and it's, oh. It so put him in his place. Because he had the table at that moment. And Nick Frost, in a very innocent way, so was the second most. You don't have an answer for that.
That's what's so endearing about him, is he is so innocent. He's just, he's honestly just asking.
And I
like,
think
Judge
Jury,
like Judge Judy and Edgar.
I think what I liked too on his face was almost like this moment. Like that was the second most painful. The way he looks at him, it's like right now.
Nice. Mr. Giorgetti?
You know what's coming from Hot Fuzz at number one, the entire
with the bullet?
The entire YARP bit, which was the guy who played Michael is the Hound from Game of Thrones. And
oh my gosh,
I didn't make that realization until like a year ago after we were watching it like we do every year.
And I'm
like,
today years old.
I was like, that's the Hound from Game of Thrones. And I was just like, this is another reason why it's the best movie ever made. But, you know, when he goes to the hotel room to, like, you know, take care of Simon Pegg, and then, you know, Simon Pegg beats him, and James Bond's like, he's not going to get up again, is he? And he goes, "Narp." Good. And then it's just like, it's just, it's so brilliant. The whole thing's brilliant.
Yes, it's, it is.
I don't know if you just called him James Bond.
I mean, I couldn't. Skinner. That's his name.
He's James Bond.
Yeah.
Skinner.
Tyler. Would you like to do your next, Tyler?
All right. Number one.
In the back, Tyler. Go ahead, right, Tyler.
My number one.
Let's hear your number one, Tyler. Okay, I'm done.
All right.
See what we have to put up with. When Nick Frost's character in Hot Fuzz, I keep forgetting his name, when he finally got to live out his dream of reenacting the Point Break scene where he fires his gun into the air, that was magical.
I love how you see it coming too. You're like, oh, he's gonna, yeah, there it comes.
But honestly, it wasn't forced, because I mean that was a real moment. If they wouldn't have mentioned it before, you would have still seen him do that, because it was, that was, are you gonna, what are you gonna do, shoot your dad?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't forced, but yeah, you just, it was like, oh, like you get excited, like he's gonna do it, it's his chance to fire the gun in the air and go, oh,
it's like,
that's, a, you know, so great about it.
It's a gun pop. Finally. Wow, YouTube's gonna hate us. Okay, Christina.
Okay, so I have a very, Shaun of the Dead will always have my heart. It is, to me, I'm sorry, the best of the three. I love the zombies, I love the humor, I love the powerful emotions, but my favorite scene, and it's my husband's fault, is when they come out of the bar and they're completely wasted and it's dark and the zombies coming towards them and they're like, and the reason it's so funny to me is my husband had to have abdominal surgery and he couldn't get to the bathroom by himself. And so my daughter was helping him. And he's got his hands on her shoulders and she's walking him and he's like, and all of a sudden she just looks at me. She's like 14 years old and this big smile breaks out and she's like, and he's like, oh, and he has no idea why this is so funny to us.
That's like the proudest parent moment ever. I think that had to be
so wrong, but so right.
It's when you know you've done it right.
Well done.
Yeah. Michelle?
So Hot Fuzz, when Danny and Angel are in the car, and he's kind of, it's the very beginning, and he's kind of just, you know, giving him the lay of the land, and he's just eating his ice cream. And so then the Lurch guy is walking towards him, and they're talking about him. He's like, so Danny's just telling him, oh, he lives with his mom and his sister. And Angel's like, are they as big as he is? And he's like, and just like without a beat, he's just eating his ice cream. He's like, they're the same person. And just, but it's like one of those moments where
pay attention
so fast, and you're just like, wait, did he just say what I think he
said? And you don't catch it on your first view. You're probably not going to catch it on your second.
Yeah, I don't think I did. I think I caught it like the second time or third time or second time I watched it. Like, holy crap, he just said what I think he said.
And it all makes sense.
Yeah.
So my recommendation to everybody is watch all three of these movies again, turn on the subtitles, and you know, put your phone down and just do it.
This is
how movies are supposed to be. Movies are supposed to completely suck you into their world.
We treat movies at my house just like we do in the theater. No phones.
That's a good idea.
And nice. You should.
Okay, and that was a show, kids. Oh, this was a fun episode.
Yeah,
subscribe, do all that stuff, share us with your friends. It means like a lot to us when you do. Go to our Patreon, because we have new stuff going behind the paywall now, which is pretty freaking cool, which makes me happy. And go to the website www.iheartgeekshow.com. use the com, we paid extra for it. That is like on I can't say it any other way. And until next time, I'm Dub. I'm here with Michelle and Chris and Tyler and Christine. I think I got that right. And keep on geeking on, kids.
Let's boo-boo.
Yarp.
You have been listening to the latest episode of the iHeart Geek Show. Make sure you visit our website at www.iheartgeekshow.com. Make sure to follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And if you check us out on YouTube, make sure to like, comment, and subscribe. And keep on geeking on to all of you geek rock stars.